questions. All right, that is recorded.
So, good morning. I'm Nick Angeron with DEP, Coastal Management Program, Office of Coastal and Land Use Planning. I'm the program administrator, I think we're referring to me as, for the Resilient NJ. Don't laugh at me, Linda.
We're making up names as we go along.
Carmen's the project manager, so I needed to be something with a higher, slightly higher made-up title. So I think everybody probably knows everybody, but...
Michael's our boss.
Go ahead. You can introduce yourself. Michael, go ahead.
I'm Michael Colbert. I'm a planner also at the Office of Coastal Land Use Planning. I'll be working on this project as well.
Oh, Carmen Valley. I told you. Carmen Valley is the project manager for this program.
So, we are going to go through a presentation just for to give go through, I guess, some of the same information that you will have seen in the application document and the NOFA at this point. Just to go through it, give everybody a base understanding of what the program is, what we're expecting to see for responses, and how this might move forward in the future. So I will note that we need to make sure that everything that we are saying here, we are saying to everyone, right? So for that reason, again, we will we're recording the questions and answers. We will take everything you've provided in writing and what we say today. We will put them in an FAQ document online. I will also note that this is the first one we're doing. So you might have some tough questions for us that we will answer to the best of our ability here today. But we might need to go back, think about it, and put together a thoughtful response. But we will be doing that for every one of your questions. All right? So I'm going to go through this. All right. So the Resilient NJ program is a regional resilience planning grant program funded by HUD through their National Disaster Resilience Competition. It is CDBG-DR funds. If you have any experience with CDBG funding, it is largely the same requirements. The program will fund up to five regional resilience action plans, as well as implementation of some actions that are included in those plans. The program is flooding focused, so that can be coastal and or riverine flooding. The program will prioritize engagement and resilience of socially vulnerable populations. And in the application, one of the attachments in the application document gives a description of our definition of that. The purpose of the grant program is to identify and address gaps in flood resilience planning in the eligible regions throughout the state. Again, there's a particular effort to reach underserved populations, ensure their representation and participation, and with particular focus on addressing their needs. We are looking to develop innovative and implementable solutions that increase flood resilience short-term, mid-term, and long-term. This presentation will also post online. You don't need to write down everything.
Okay.
Or you can, but you don't have to. Come on.
We're not taking notes about this. This is about another project.
All the great stuff. All right.
Remember that when you're grading.
All right.
Try hitting escape and start over.
Close that. Spacebar. So, again, intent goals of the program are to implement and advance prioritized actions to reduce flood risks in the eligible regions. We also are looking at this not from a strictly resilience perspective, or not just the resilience of the people and community, but also looking to incorporate the ecological, recreational, economic resources of the regions. And we're looking to ensure collaboration among stakeholders. So here's a general project timeline. So we are pretty much in the first box here where we've just released the application document and the NOFA. July 20th to respond to that notice of funds availability. I shouldn't just say the acronym. We also plan on releasing, hopefully later this summer, another notice of funds availability to bring in programmatic assistance that is in the, should be in the form of nonprofit and NGOs. And then in the late summer, fall, we will be releasing a request for proposals through Treasury to bring in consulting teams. So the phases of the two phases of the program, the first phase is a planning phase, right? Where we'll spend, I'm gonna use round numbers, say about a year and a half, go through a comprehensive planning process. Second phase, so the first phase, the end product there is an action plan that identifies prioritized actions in response to vulnerabilities that we'll identify. The second phase will be to take some of the planning actions that have been identified and will be funded to actually implement them. And the entire program, again, needs to be done by May of 2022 so that we can wrap it up. All Sandy funds must be spent by September of 2022, and that's congressional. There's no extension there. The structure of the program. Right, so we will be selecting regional teams, which is why you're here today, in response to the notice of funds availability. We will also be selecting consultant teams. The consultant teams will be the ones who are actually doing the majority of the planning and technical work for your regions. We will also bring in NGOs, nonprofit organizations, largely to assist the department in areas where we don't necessarily have some expertise that we desperately need and want as part of the program. So the nine communities most impacted in distress count are the nine most impacted in distress counties as identified by HUD post Sandy. Make sure that I always say that these were identified by HUD. Cumberland County always yells at us when we say that. Your regional teams must include at least four members. So that is at least three contiguous municipalities and at least one community-based organization, which I'll get into a little bit of a discussion later on. One member of that team also needs to be the prime. The prime is going to technically be the applicant. They must be eligible to receive funds from the state and distribute it to their project partners, team partners. So what is the prime? So as part of the application process, again, they will be the actual applicant that comes in. They will be required to coordinate the team members for all meetings, all activities. That includes management of the grant, there includes distribution of funds to all of the other team members. That includes reporting to us. So we do expect that the prime will get, it'll be up to the team, but the prime can receive more funding than the other team members in order to cover those tasks. The prime can be any entity that is eligible, right? So that means it can be a municipality, a county, community-based organization, a regional organization, a utility authority. There may be others that we haven't necessarily thought of, but if you're eligible for the program, you can be the prime. So again, the two phases of the program. The first phase, starting hopefully early next year, and we'll go for about a year and a half, is to attend and actively participate throughout the comprehensive planning process. The planning process is not the state or the contractors telling your project team, telling your region what should happen there. It is to take your feedback and develop resilience or actions that help your region become more resilient. Right? I want to be clear about that. This is not the state telling you you have to do this. This is to bring you the technical and planning support to take your vision, the vision of your region, hopefully help you think outside the box a bit here, and come up with a comprehensive plan that addresses resilience for the future. That process includes participation for community outreach. We want your input for asset identification and risk assessment, to develop the scenarios, how we want to respond to the vulnerability and the risk that we identify, and actual development of the plan. Phase two, which starts after the development of that action plan, we expect again to start at the latter end of 2020 and go through May 31st of 2022. The plan that is developed in phase one, we expect will have prioritized actions. Phase two, there will include funding to implement some of those planning actions that come out of that project, the plan development. The consultant teams will be responsible for actually executing, implementing those activities. Through phase two, the regional teams are expected to still participate throughout the process. So what can the funds be used for? Your regional teams, your team members, you can reimburse staff time for your expenses, right? So your personnel costs, your salary, your fringe, your indirect, for travel, for supplies, up to the grant amount that is awarded. So we get this question a lot already. Any town that, if you wish to use a consultant for their time, HUD requires that a consultant be procured through a separate procurement process, even if you already have them under contract, right? You can do that. Some of you probably have experience through the local government assistance grant program through DCA a few years ago. There's the same requirement there. If you already have a contractor who you use, and you don't want to go out through another procurement process, you can still use them as match on this. Match is not required, but you may still use their time as match for these funds. So what type of actions can we actually implement in phase two? So projects have to comply with HUD's requirements for planning only activities. So this includes data gathering, this includes studies and analysis, preparation of plans, long-range planning documents, identification of solutions. It cannot be used for engineering and architectural drawings in support of construction. We can use these funds to do conceptual design. It cannot go beyond that into the construction phase. So application requirements, and these have been identified in the application document. So we want you to describe your flood risk and your history. This is in the proposal narrative, sorry. Flood risk and history of your region. Identify previous planning and regional initiatives. We want you to identify your socially vulnerable populations, those that you're aware of. Describe your region in terms of its unique assets and issues that you think make it a good region to implement this planning process. There are certain requirements that have to be included in the application, including a duplication of benefits affidavit, a letter of commitment from each team member, as well as a budget proposal. The budget proposal will not be used to score the applications, but we will use them to develop the budget and the grant. All right, so the application criteria that we'll use to evaluate the applications that come in. The max score is 100 points, and there are three sections where you can get points. The first is a demonstration of need, so that's up to 40 points. Again, we're looking for you to identify your vulnerability, past flooding events, future vulnerability, issues that you've dealt with in the past. We are looking for you again to provide a detailed description of your vulnerable populations and particularly the impact of past disasters on them. We are also prioritizing low and moderate income, LMI, communities again, and there's an attachment to the grant application that identifies those areas. The second area that we'll be doing scoring on is your demonstration of capacity to actually manage and implement the grant. So can you get it done, right? We all recognize that this is gonna be a multi-year effort. This is gonna be, we think, a lot of work. It's HUD, so there's even more paperwork than even, you know, we're used to at the state level. So we need to make sure that you have the capacity to handle this. And again, a regional description. What makes your region unique? What are the issues that are particular to your region? Why should we be providing you the grants? So we'll be looking for your application submittals, at least one electronic version. We'll be looking for 3 hard copies. We need to have the postmarked email by July 20th, 2018. You'll be sending them to Carmen at that address. If and when you are selected, there will be additional requirements before we actually execute an award contract and a contract, subrecipient agreement is the correct term. So we will need actual resolutions for governing bodies. Remember, in the application itself, we're just looking for letters of support at this point. If you're awarded a grant, we will need actual resolutions from the communities. We will be looking for your annual grant audit report. We will be looking for cost rate sheets for the people who would be working on the grant. There's a citizen participation plan that is required through HUD. And we'll be looking for an MOA or other some sort of legal agreement between the prime and all the team members to ensure that the funds can be distributed. Any questions that you have beyond that we discussed today, that you come up with later, you can send us at this email address. We'll respond to them in writing just as we do anything that comes up here. So that's the end of the presentation. I know we have some questions in writing.
Let me just start reading.
Let's go for it.
Okay. Is the New Jersey Coastal Coalition eligible, and in what roles? Role or roles?
So my understanding, right, so you're a 501c3?
That's correct.
Coalition? So yes, the coalition would be eligible, as the prime would also be eligible as a CBO. It would be up to you and your team members to determine which of those roles you want to take.
Okay. What we can say is that we've said this publicly already, community-based organizations are going to be evaluated based on their ability to support the task of bringing socially vulnerable populations into the process. So you can decide how that fits in. I can also say that we are looking to build, we are taking a wide definition of what a CBO is. And we are looking to build strong regional teams also, so we are including, you saw that we are including regional authorities and utility authorities in the application process. You can think about those types of, what role those types of organizations would play and how they fit into this also. So, but specific, so and you can have more than one of these organizations involved in a team also. That is fine. So you can think to yourselves about what role your organization or other organizations might play as part of a regional group.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Thanks, David.
Sure. What is the role of the college / universities / NGOs in this program?
So
there's some questions. So there is specifically in reference to Program Assistance to NJDEP's Office of Coastal Land Use Planning for Phase 1 and Phase 2. As consultant teams or as a vetted consultant for the regional teams prime?
I would expect that academic institutions or any 501c3 NGO would be able to respond as part of a regional team, but also they could respond to the NOPA for specifically for technical assistance for the department. They could also theoretically be part of a consulting team responding to the RFP. So I think if they have technical planning, design, expertise, they could be part of any one of, they can respond to any one of those funding opportunities.
Would a university be able to respond to the RFP, the NOFA, excuse me.
This current NOFA. I believe.
If they're a for-profit entity and not a non-profit entity.
I don't see in what, role they would be able to do that if they're a for-profit entity. Although, let's go back and make sure. All right, so.
Are there any that aren't for-profit?
So like a private university, for example.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just as an example. So I can't imagine what role, I can't think of it off the top of my head, what role they would play as part of the regional teams. But I don't want to outright say no at this point. We'll go back and think on that one a little bit harder.
So the next question is, what is the role of private sector engineering / architectural / environmental / TA? I'm going to guess that's technical assistance.
Yeah.
First.
So again, they could respond to the RFP as part of a consulting team. If they are already under contract with one of the regional team members, they could act as match as part of the grant. Otherwise, one of the regional team members could procure them separately through a separate process to act as their technical representative, however you want to use them throughout the process. If you want to use these grant funds to fund a for-profit entity, so this maybe answers the academic question as well, you have to go through a separate procurement process.
And there's no guarantee that they will be selected. It has to be a fair and open process. Mm-hmm. So they're competing with a bunch of other folks,
right.
Maybe.
Right.
And they have to qualify in order to be selected.
Okay.
It's no guarantee.
Right.
Just because they work for the town, they will be the ones selected.
Can a regional team applicant include FEMA and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers involvement?
I want to go back and make sure of this, but I'm almost certain the answer is the funding cannot be used to fund other federal agencies. In which case, I would imagine the role of those federal agencies would be as CBO. They can't receive funding, but they could be a CBO, I guess, on the...
They can do whatever they want on the project. They can participate.
Yeah.
They could give us consultative input, as long as we're not spending any money for them, or we're not, charging a consultant for talking to them or something.
Right. They cannot receive any funding primarily or secondarily through this. Yeah. I imagine they would.
We have a strong relationship with them.
Yeah.
So I just want to know if we could. Out to them.
Let me, I want to go back and
follow
up on that one specifically. That it hadn't, that including a federal agency as part of the regional team had not occurred to me.
Is there a preferred optimal number of municipalities in a regional team application?
No.
Okay.
Completely up to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'll note, right, so there's a minimum of 3 contiguous. Technically, it can be as large number as long as they're within those 9 eligible counties.
Right.
For the recording, should I read off where the questions are coming from?
I don't think we need to, if we just want to know where they are.
Okay, so the next question is a cost benefit required for implementation projects?
So as part of the planning process, we will provide a cost-benefit analysis of the response scenarios, right? So again, the response scenario for our definition here is a suite of actions, whether they be plans or outreach and education programs, or, you know, if there's a proposal for, you know, floodgates across, you know, Raritan Bay, theoretically could all be included in this action plan. What we can actually implement, though, right, are planning specific actions. So we will have done some level of cost-benefit analysis for the activities that are identified in the plan. Those activities will be prioritized primarily on, we'll be looking to prioritize them on regional impact as well as their cost, right? So we're looking for the greatest bang for the buck. So I guess I think the answer is no, we would not need to do a separate cost-benefit analysis for the phase two implementation. We will have done some level of one in the phase one planning process.
And the consultant team would really be handling that
yes.
function?
Yes.
Okay. I've taken the course and I will. The consultant team will do it.
Yes.
Can resiliency plans be designed to be creditable through the community rating system?
We fully expect that activities that are eligible for points in CRS would be identified as actions within the plans. Again, that will be up to, you know, kind of the vision of the regional team and, you know, what they come up with working with the contractors. But I would expect that some of the actions identified within would be eligible for CRS points.
What is the relationship between this program and the New Jersey Frames planning process?
There is certainly no formal relationship. Why don't I just leave it at that? There's no relationship between this grant program and the Frames project.
How will DEP be notifying municipalities of this opportunity?
How are we broadcasting the opportunity now? All right, so there was, the NOFA was published in the New Jersey Register, which I'm sure everybody reads religiously, on Monday the 21st. There was a press release on Wednesday the 23rd. There was an email to every mayor, administrator, and clerk in the nine counties on Thursday, I think. We have also contacted some of our usual partner organizations, Sustainable Jersey being an example, to broadcast it to their network. So we've done that in a number of cases. We also did outreach prior to the NOFA. We got something, one public meeting or one meeting at least, in most of the counties, not the counties. What else are we doing? Anything else?
We have contacted, or at least attempted to contact, every county planner, every county planning organization in the nine counties. We've contacted everyone who has assisted in setting up a meeting for part of our pre-NOFA application process. New Jersey Association of Counties was contacted and asked to send it to their networks.
I do believe that we'll be sending out a reminder email, again, to every mayor, administrator, clerk in the nine counties. I will also note that, if it wasn't clear, the counties are also eligible applicants here. So we've been sending something to, I think, the county clerks as well, and we've sent something to the county planners in those nine counties as well.
Can you confirm that the 15 municipalities in the Monmouth County Two Rivers Frames Project are not eligible for these funds?
They would need, the municipalities in the Frames region would need to look at the duplication of benefit requirements from HUD and make the determination of whether or not they can and want to respond to this notice of funds availability.
You can't be clearer about that?
I cannot. So okay. So they should look, you and they should all look at the federal guidance on duplication of benefits, which I think is identified in the.
It's in the application.
It's in the application, yes.
Yeah. We are unable to make that determination without them actually providing that information.
That's all I have written.
Okay, so we would prefer that we have all the questions in writing. We can go back and forth though. Carmen is taking notes of our recording, so we should be able to answer further questions if you have them at this point.
Can the planning funding be used for updates to hazard mitigation plans or floodplain management plans for CRS?
So I think that the answer is generally yes, so long as we're not duplicating any work that has already been done, or that the local governments will get or are getting funding for, right? So if they're going to get, I don't know, if they're going to get money from OEM to update, if they're getting money from OEM to update their plan, we wouldn't give them funding to also do it. We certainly would identify those as examples. We may identify them as actions in the plan that should happen, but whether they actually get implemented, we need to make sure that there's no duplication. But otherwise, yes, they would be eligible planning activities that could be funded.
It could also be that activities that get identified as part of the planning process would be things that you guys would consider on your own, putting into your hazard mitigation plans, just as a benefit of our participation in our program.
Can you just repeat the question, Nick? Question just to make sure we got it.
Can the funding be used to update hazard mitigation plans or the floodplain management planning activity through the community rating system?
Thank you.
So, Nick, just so I understand this, so you're talking about in phase one, you could do that. It wouldn't necessarily have to wait to phase two.
So, in phase one, we will do the comprehensive planning process,
right,
and identify the recommended activities,
right,
to be implemented.
Correct.
In either phase two or through any other separate,
right,
process.
But the question that he just had regarding the hazard mitigation plans or the floodplain management plans, he was talking about doing that in the first phase.
No, I would not expect that they would be implemented. They would not be done in the first phase.
Right,
so
that's
the
question.
They'll be identified.
So they could be identified in the first phase as an action to be implemented.
Right, that's what I read the instructions. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Linda.
So you mentioned earlier that DEP will provide a cost benefit analysis of some of the scenarios during phase one.
Yes.
Can you provide examples of what that cost-benefit analysis might look like, whether you have a template, is the template part of the Frames project, and just what it might, what it looks like, what does it measure?
So we, for the use in this program, we are developing a methodology that will be used by the contractors across all of the regions.
Contractors?
So we have a contractor currently developing a methodology. That methodology will be used by the contractors in providing the technical and planning support to the regional governments, right? So we'll be able to compare apples to apples is the point here. So the methodology is still under development, so I can't say in any level of detail what that will look like. It is, again, though, intended to look at an entire suite of actions, and for all intents and purposes, compare it to a no action scenario. So what would the impact be from a flooding event or events? What would be the savings from this suite of actions? And again, we're looking at that from not just dollars, but ecological and social.
And we will be able to look at things that are not necessarily quantifiable as part of that.
Right.
Okay.
I expect, to some extent, the social and ecological, some of the work we're seeing, we are able to put dollars and cents to some of that, but a lot of it is still, qualitative, not quantifiable exactly. So, but it will be incorporated.
And I'm sorry, but you mentioned you're using the word contractors. Are those the consultants on the frames team?
Those are the contractor. So we have a separate contractor through this program.
Uh-huh.
It's Michael Baker.
Okay.
He is doing work for us. They were selected through a CMF bid, Treasury bid, process through Treasury. They were selected through that public process. They are supporting. Providing us assistance, they will be developing that methodology, which the contractors selected through the RFP will then utilize in the.
You mean the consultants?
Yes, contractors.
Yeah.
Sorry,
well, yeah.
Mixed contractors, consultants. Yeah. So the respondents to the RFP, the technical and planning teams, will use the cost-benefit analysis methodology that we provide.
Excellent.
In the planning process.
Okay.
So we don't really need at this stage to know exactly what that formula is, or just that that's going to be one of the criteria items that move forward from phase one to phase two. And the fact is that our experience with the former federal benefit cost analysis would give us some framework for what we're talking about.
So
we've got to show that the benefit of doing this suite of actions is superior to having no action at all.
So we will use this methodology to evaluate and prioritize specific actions, right? Just that this will not be like a cost benefit ratio that HUD or that the Army Corps requires, for example.
Okay.
We want to make sure that we are including ecological and social impacts in the evaluation of that of the actions. Those actions will be prioritized in that plan that is developed.
Okay.
And again, they'll be prioritized based on regional impact and cost, right? We'll be looking at whether they're implementable at all. But that's just to determine what gets implemented, funded in phase two.
Okay, thank you. That's great.
This is something that is not going to be as part of the NOFA process for the regions. It's not a criteria that you're going to have to worry about at all.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's going to come into play when we get into the process of phase one.
Right.
With the contractor providing the driving force based on what. And it sounds like there's going to be some subjective factors in there that you have to show how well integrated your project is in terms of the municipalities, the CBOs, and especially hitting the LMI initiative.
Right. I mean, we're making a specific point that this is not something that the Army Corps is using, right?
Okay.
We want to make sure.
That's the course I took.
Right. So the Corps has their requirements, and that's fine. And there will be, I'm sure, some similar pieces of that in our overall methodology. We want to go beyond their cost benefit analysis.
Okay. Thank you. That's a great answer. Thank you.
I don't
want to
hog the floor. So I understand the use of the word implementation is about planning actions. This is about plans, reports, documents.
Right.
However, is in the deliverable, the action plan, and I forgot the exact wording of it, can those recommendations be physical infrastructure?
Absolutely.
Oh, they're just not implemented as part of this project.
Right. Again, this was my smart aleck example of it can be floodgates across Raritan Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that could absolutely be an action included in the plan.
Okay.
We cannot implement that piece of it. You know, it could be anything from you should put rain gardens to you should build a seawall to floodgates. Everything and everything can be included in the action plan. We're just limited as to what we can actually fund implementation of in phase two.
What I've said in the past is that we are limited to, we can do conceptual design, we can do feasibility studies as part of this, and we can do almost anything that in terms related to a planning or administrative or programmatic component of this. So it can be anything from the conceptual design of a microgrid to getting pre-approval for a temporary debris removal site, to doing inventories of your stormwater infrastructure for operations and maintenance plans, and tons of other activities. There are many, many, many activities out there that are not necessarily physical that can help build the resilience of your communities. And we want to take a hard look at all those things and take a look at things and try and come up with things that we haven't thought of in the past.
Yes, you're encouraged to do that. And there's a lot of examples presented in the application document, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just to whet your appetite. Right?
Yes, we don't want to limit what can go in. There's no limit as to what can go in the plan itself. Whether it can get funded in phase two is a separate question. And, you know, as we've been saying for most of our planning projects, it is our hope and intent that at a minimum, going through this comprehensive process sets you up for when additional funding does become available.
No, there was no problem with it, but each time you read it, you get a little more out of it.
No, we get that.
Ideas.
Different eyes, you know, come up with different questions.
Giving us an opportunity to have regional planning assisted not only by multiple municipalities and CBOs, but by bringing in a consultant team that's highly qualified to assist us. And if we get the grant, that's what we're guaranteed. Where we go into phase two, still an open matter, but we're set up to have our game plan, our strategy, as we always did in Cape May, and we do it in the Coastal Coalition with our shovel-ready projects. You know, be they documentation or studies or feasibility studies, or be they hardscape or living shorelines, we have the plan there, we have it prioritized, and we have it worked out in terms of a potential budget for it.
Exactly.
It's very nice.
We did require that these questions be put in writing, and I was able to capture them shorthand kind of thing, but I don't want to miss any of your questions, so if you remember what they are, I can remind you, just you can either email us with the same questions you just asked, just this verbal thing.
Okay.
This verbal back and forth, yeah. Just to make sure.
To the extent that you can at this point.
To the extent that you can. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to capture your questions.
We have Carmen's notes and the recording. Hopefully between that, we'll make sure we have it.
Yeah.
We have everything, but. Just making sure it's still running. All right, well, we'll be here for another hour if you think of anything. You want to come back?
Anybody wants to get to the break?
Yeah.
Sort of an unrelated question. The other states along the East Coast where they got sandy money, are they doing anything similar, or have they done anything similar? Now that we're getting near the end of the sandy money, but the needs are still there and people are more attuned at every level of government to seeing if they can do proactive measures for planning and implementation.
So we've been looking nationally,
okay.
To see if there's nothing, there's certainly nothing that's exactly the same, right? There are a number of regional planning projects that are ongoing through the same competition, Natural Disaster Resilience Competition. Connecticut has a planning component. We're the only pure planning award through that federal program. There are other programs, projects throughout the country that certainly have similar components, we think, to this. I've said this in a presentation in the past. I kicked myself for doing it, but I'm gonna do it again. Part of this is not completely dissimilar from, say, RBD, from Rebuild by Design. Mm-hmm. If you've been paying attention as to what's going on out in San Francisco,
right,
in their bay, they're doing a resilience by design.
Yeah.
Right? But they're not doing the comprehensive, they're not looking at that as like, it's not a comprehensive planning approach, right? It's very focused on the design piece. Right. We want the design piece to be a piece of this,
okay,
but not the sole piece of it. So we've not found anything that is identical. We've found a number of projects where kind of pieces of it are similar, or might, you know, kind of plug into what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Okay.
LA has a similar one that's sort of been focused.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're always looking around to see what else is going on, what we can take, steal, borrow from them to improve our work through this program or any of our other programs. There's good stuff going on nationally, but nothing that we've seen that quite has the same scope. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
This is a big effort.
Is it just going to be the three of you?
I
only thought of that after you ended that sentence, Nick.
We have other staff who are on the program full-time or part-time.
Okay.
So no, it's not just the three of us. But
okay.
Carmen's on this 100% of the time. I'm on this significant amount of time. Michael's on this significant amount of time. And then we have other staff who are on it a good amount of time as well. And depending on how the regional selection goes and how the RFP goes, will determine exactly to what level of involvement we'll have. But we will have at least one staff member on each and every project to not to necessarily ensure consistency, because we don't want to limit you, but to ensure that we're meeting all of our administrative requirements, to ensure that they have everyone has the most up-to-date information. There will be some kind of peer-to-peer networking we're hoping to set up through this for the regional teams, so that they can learn from each other, so that consultant teams can learn from each other. We will be setting up a SharePoint site so everybody has access to documents. We already have our website up, which has some basics on the program. We think that the consultants selected through the RFP will set up an individual project website, right? So we want to make this ensure as broad a sharing as we can, not just through the awardees, but also throughout the rest of the state, so that they can learn from what's going on and we can learn on what's going on to inform activities going forward.
Is there any connection with this project to Section 309 goals and objectives? Like, should we be, or is it because this is funded through HUD, it shouldn't be? It doesn't necessarily need to relate to the Section 309.
Correct. So he's referring to Section 309 of the Coastal Zone Management Act. which New Jersey, which is part of New Jersey's Coastal Management Program, Section 309, we get some funding from NOAA to enhance our coastal program. So this is HUD funded, so there is no direct relationship between those two programs. There is, however, overlap in, you know, priorities, you know, so coastal hazards, cumulative and secondary impacts in the wetlands in the 309 program, you know, are all issues. You know, resiliency and coastal hazards are the focus, or a focus, I should say, of this program. I want to make sure everybody understands that we are looking beyond coastal flooding for this. Right? We've had questions about riverine flooding over the last several years. Everyone in those nine counties is eligible. We also have Michael Baker looking at riverine flooding expansion due to climate change, which we'll have as a tool to utilize through this program. Again, it's also currently under development. So it's not just coastal flooding, it is resilience, and again, so there's overlap in the top issue areas, but no direct relationship between the programs. What we have done and learned in the past through our NOAA funding is absolutely informing what happens here, though.
So you just mentioned Michael Baker is also, sounds like they're developing a riverine assessment, mm-hmm. In addition to the cost-benefit analysis template. Are they under contract to provide any other deliverables?
They will be assisting us with the peer-to-peer efforts. They help us with outreach. Once the projects get going, they will also be assisting us with just project grant management. We didn't mention this. We mentioned this in the presentation. It is mentioned in the application document. We are using CIROMS, if you're familiar with it. I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's the SANDI.
Strategic information.
The SANDI funding, all of, it's the tracking system developed by DCA. So we will be using that. Rest of your prime will be using that. And then again, Michael Baker will be assisting us just help manage and juggle all of the pieces of this.
The prime for every regional team will be submitting information. Are they domain? We're submitting it to Baker.
They'll be submitting it into CIROMS.
Into CIROMS. And Baker will look at it and approve it or not. And then Baker sends it to me. And then it's funneled to me eventually. Operations management system. There you go.
CIROMS. CIROMS.
Give it to us again, Carmen.
All right, sure. SANDI, Integrated Recovery and Operations Management System.
What's that?
SANDI, Integrated Recovery and Operations Management System. Got that?
Yeah.
It might be in the application, no? Did we spell it out?
It is
the other?
Perfect. Is it there?
It's not spelled out. I've never seen it either.
It's the acronym there, it's not spelled out there.
Okay.
it's similar to the SAGE program that they use in the state. So when you get grants, once you get into it, it's great because all your grants from all the agencies of the state go into the SAGE system, and then you're able to monitor them on a holistic basis, and we're able to handle all our programmatic and financial data. And I think it helps the state more or less by knowing what town got how much money from how many sources and whether they're spending it and accounting for it properly. And then when we apply for a grant, then they know where we stand, but how many we have outstanding, how many is doing and so forth. I think it's, and I think it has much more accountability financially too.
Yeah, we'll be using it to track every monthly report, every payment voucher, and we'll eventually lead into, that's how your check will get printed.
Okay. Will this, having, as Mayor Kay May, having had a New Jersey EPA grant for a large recreational complex, and it was through HUD, money came to EPA, and I had two sets of audits, programmatic and also financial. So we kept every single piece of paper that ever transpired on the project, either change orders or notes from the contractor, three ring binders. I assume some of this will help expedite that, so there's no missing paper trail or elements to it. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
It should help.
Oh, I think it really will help.
I mean, we're still going to have to, have all of our paper copies. There will be, HUD will audit the program regularly. Carmen knows the auditing requirements better than I do. But yeah, there'll be audits.
I have a question. Maybe if I thought about this more, I could figure it out myself, but when we were talking about billing, so on the regional teams, if a municipalities has a couple of council members directly involved, attends the meetings, and is spearheading portions of this, how is that reflected in the billing process?
Are they paid regularly as they're as a council?
They're paid $2,000 a year.
So I think, I'm not sure if there's any limit because they're council members. I don't know.
And it's a stipend, so that's not a rate.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, honestly, I'm going to look at that one.
Are you saying you're going to pay them to go to the meetings?
I'm just raising the question. Yeah.
In most towns, it doesn't work that way. You get a stipend out of the current fund budget of the municipality, and that covers your whatever you get per year, and you don't charge any meeting attendance to anybody.
Right. I just would like to know up front, because if that's the case, then none of the planning boards, commissions, or council members then would bill for this project. So the billing would only be employees of the local government and perhaps any of their consultants that they've hired through this process.
Sounds right.
I think that's right, but
yeah.
We'll certainly get right.
Based on what the budget is, you give to the state.
Right.
You may elect to have that be any kind of match.
I know, I've but this is a different, matter of identifying rates for in-kind services,
right?
For federal grants, we've done that. Okay.
Okay. Follow up, Herman. What are the tough ones, you Alan?
Looks like a Nithwith logo. Somebody tweaked it.
We did tweak it.
It's from the old department logo, our Office of Customs.
Which was used by Nicola. So you should recognize it, yeah. You should recognize it from our CCI, too. Not too long ago. I don't remember anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to forget.
Pain look on the face.
Yeah, we tweaked it a little bit.
We had an afternoon to kill.
All right, I'm good to go.
All right.
Thank you for this informative session.
Thank you very much.
You're way ahead of the game now.
Thank you.
So again, if you think of anything else, you can write us at this email address.
Yeah.
Okay. Or you can write us if you know our email addresses, and we'll take what we said today, we'll take whatever we have in writing, and we will develop an FAQ document that we will update regularly on the program website.
Okay.
Follow us on Instagram.
And unrelated, the consultant's RFP, which sounds like it's really an RFQ. When is that? You're just saying still?
We're still saying a few months. We have to go through Treasury, Division of Property and Purchasing.
But isn't that really an RFQ because you're soliciting teams and then you're going to select the team?
Yeah,
and then there's another process
where
they bid on them.
Yeah, the way we originally had been referring to it was an RFQ, and DPP said no, it's an RFP. But the way we all think about it, yes, it's an RFQ. They will be selected through that process. They will then essentially go through a mini bid process on each of the regions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the matchmaking will occur.
So even though they're selected, I know this isn't part of it, so you can say, I'm not talking, but if they're selected as part of the RFP process, does that mean they're necessarily going to be awarded to one of the, based on the bids?
There's no guarantee.
There's no guarantee. Okay. Well, it's been real.
Good seeing you, Linda.
Yep, me too.
Michael, did you get a card yet?
A what?
It was a card, a business card.
Oh, come on, you've been on forever.
Yeah.
No.
I have Nick's.
How long does that take?
I'll just respond to this. That's fine. Okay. Listen, thanks a lot. That was very helpful.
Good seeing you.
Same here. Yeah, take care, right? Good luck.
Yeah.
It paid to read the document before I. Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, it does. Okay. It's a good opportunity.
Good to meet you.
Okay.
We're looking forward to that.
This goes. So Michael's cards are ordered.
Okay. He's been saying that for 3 months.
I know. We followed up on it again, and there's still. We're the scientists.
You know what? I think where some confusion came in. Michael, you may think of this. When this first leaked out, it was informally talked about. They talked about $10 million. So everybody thought erroneously that there was going to be $10 million that still hadn't been spent from Sandy that was going to go for hardscape and softscape projects. And so everybody got all geared up. And that wasn't the purpose at all. And it's not until you did the detailed planning on your side that it came down to what you're doing. I like what you're doing. That's what we, when Obama came into office, he wanted those, remember everybody had this long-range resilience, it had just become the buzzword in 2007. Everybody was getting these resiliency projects. They had these lists of projects and all that. Well, when Obama came in, he had the shovel-ready approach. In late May, we had been working on that approach, and everybody said, oh, you guys are wrong. We got the money. We had the projects, we were ready to go. We already had them engineered. We had a plan. They were in our master plan. They were prioritized. We got the funding. We had the engineering, and we did quite well. And people were wondering. I never said anything. Our team just said, just keep it growing because our town can't afford, we need these things.
Right.
We can't afford to pay for them. So that's how it helped us. And after Sandy, it's pretty much the same thing. You had a good track record, and you had the project ready to go. And that's how I like the idea of you providing the consultant teams. That's worked out for us well, very well, in the last 3 or 4 years since you started.
Yeah, and that way you don't have to manage all of them and their paperwork and all that.
And you're paying them.
Yes.
So you don't have all that money you have to account for. And then the other thing I like is you don't have some firm that you usually use or that comes on board just for this project who then decides to try to gouge it over a barrel. And you've got this grant that you've got to account for, and he's holding you hostage, basically what it is. I had bicycle. DOT uses it too, and it's worked out very well for us.
So they do the matchmaking for you?
Yeah, they do the matchmaking. I got two bike paths, a total of $600,000, and then I got $300,000 planning grant to put a whole bike system in. I got that first, and because I did this planning approach, then I got the two bike paths because I had the plan.
Yes. He has to think about it first.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, you know, I learned what it was. We brought it was Parsons Brinkerhoff that came, WSP Parsons Brinkerhoff. They did a great job. And then what happened was, you know, I dawned on me, hey, if we put the grant application in and they provided the money at DOT to do the planning grant, why wouldn't they fund it? And that's what they did. So, but we had a good plan. And we made sure that they visited us once in a while to see us working on it. But the key thing there was making sure that it went through the lower and moderate income areas too, that we made bikes available, and we did things like that. So that's, you know, there was a lot of planning involved, and getting the citizens involved. So.
Yeah.
So it's great. So thank you both. Thank the three of you, okay? And hopefully we'll work on this hard.
All right.
Okay, good. Good. We had a meeting next week. I don't know if you have time to come down. That's our semi-annual. We have, in our Coastal Coalition, we've been working for 3 years, and we finally got it, a multi-jurisdictional PPI.
I saw the...
So we have one of our two mandatory meetings that we have each year, being Cape May Convention Hall, and we serve lunch. But anyway, all the towns will be there in the coalition, but there's 11 towns that are in the peak. Multi jurisdictional PPI. It's already starting to have benefits for us this year with exponential points in the CRS. So it's been a good thing.
Very good.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry you have to. We tried to. You were too good there at the presentation. No, and you answered all the questions. I wrote those questions down when I was reading it for the second time.
Yeah.
That's good. We're glad you read it. We're glad we got the questions.
Okay. Yeah. Have you gotten a lot of inquiries about this yet? Or? Or is it too early to tell?
Yeah.
I think it's too early. We've received several questions, some which we've already talked about today. Let it go. Let it go.
Okay.
Just to be, so we're...
Yeah.
Clear.
Okay. Yeah, nobody's getting special.
We got a lot of general interest before the release of the NOFA, and there was a lot of outreach done before the release of the NOFA.
Yeah.
So how that translates once the NOFA is out,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, well, you came to one of our Coastal Coalition meetings and talked about it.
Yeah, I've been all over the place.
Bill Dixon was down with the Army Corps to meet with the Cape May County Mayor, so
yeah.
I was invited there.
Yeah, I was there. I was there with them.
Yeah, and that it was mentioned there, so you were there for that. So
yeah.
I just, you know, I think everybody knows it's out there.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I don't see that. I think the problem is, as I said before, people thought this is going to pay for jetties and things like that, which it isn't right off the bat.
We had a phone call from a consulting firm, and as soon as I said, they're like, wait, we can't build anything with this?
Yeah.
All right, no, thank you, bye.
Click.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and as I said, the colleges have reached out to us because they all work with our Coastal Coalition,
yeah,
and they're trying to figure out their role, but, you know, I thought it was pretty obvious, but I wrote the question down anyway, what role they'd have, so. And depending upon how they're constituted, as you said, that'll depend on what avenue they take.
Yeah, they get directly respond to every single opportunity.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
We'll see. It's up to that margin.
Okay. Well, nice seeing you all.
Yes.
Okay.
Likewise. Nice meeting you.
Have a good day.
We need to get an answer about the private colleges.
Yeah.
I am pausing the recording.